Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, my friends, to Web Sleuth Radio on Blog Talk Radio. This is Tricia Griffith. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Let me get the legal goo out of the way because we have a lot to talk about. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the guests and the host, and I take no responsibility for them, especially my own, so there. Web Sleuth Radio is not the same thing as WebSleuth.com, which is a completely different corporate entity. Okay, tonight we're going to talk about two cases, the Susan Powell case first, and then we're going to discuss Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. I would really like to hear from you tonight, so please call in 760-825-0933. Again, that number to call in and talk is 760-825-0933. And Kimster, are you there, my dear?
Yes, I am.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, well, none of our guests have called in yet that we're supposed to. And so, let's see, who's in chat? Is there anyone in chat? Wait a minute, my chat is not connected. Just a minute. I got a little scared there. It looked like nobody was there.
We have chat people. We have Nana Francis, Ranch Hand, Wonder Llama, and Shanna, too.
Fantastic.
Maybe it's Shauna, too. Is that
good.
Shauna or Shanna?
Well, here's the deal, okay? We're going to talk about two cases tonight. And Kimster, our wonderful, incredible executive producer, and basically the woman that I rely on to breathe, will be watching the phones to make sure when our guests call in that we're ready. So, Kimster, just let me know when either guest is called in, okay?
I will.
Okay, thank you. Here's the scoop. I grew up and still live in Utah, okay, one of the whitest places in America. So for me to comment on anything to do with the experiences of African Americans would be ludicrous, rude, and honestly very arrogant. I have no idea what it is like to be a minority. And now think about this. I'm 53. When I was a kid, the N-word was still okay. I can't even imagine. It would never occur to me to say it now, and I'm sure my son would never say it, but if I ever heard any kid say it, I'd be the first one to step up and make him stop. Not acceptable anymore. Back when I was growing up, Jim Crow laws in the South were still in effect, and really and truly, in the 60s and 70s, there was a large hatred of African Americans. It was spread far and wide in the U.S. I don't think we can deny that. I remember the shock of seeing, when I was a little kid, the shock of seeing a mixed-race couple and the shock my parents expressed that two people from different races would marry. I mean, it just wasn't done. Now, doesn't it all seem ridiculous now? I mean, who cares if they want to marry? Good for them. They're in love. That's great. But back then, it was a big deal. So it's, you know, in my opinion, I think we've come a long way in race relations, but that's easy for me to say growing up in Utah, you know, and so I know that. And I can't even suggest that I know or understand what it's like to be African American in this country, so I'm not going to comment on that experience because, that, like I said, that would be very arrogant of me. However, I do know what it's like to be a human being, no matter what color, what religion, what sex, whatever. And what some garbage people are spewing in the Trayvon Martin case, well, it's as ugly as anything I've ever seen, and it's black and white. If you'd like to call in, our number is 760-825-0933. Spike Lee, director, made a lot of movies. I think he is a jerk. I've never liked him. I just think he is he's just not a nice guy at all. Well, get this. He retweeted to all of his Twitter followers the address of this poor little old couple in Florida. Sweetest little couple. I think they're in their late 70s. Innocent people who have nothing to do with the Trayvon Martin case. But Spike Lee was told that this address was the address of George Zimmerman. Now, because Spike Lee retweeted it, the couple had to leave their home. I hope they sue and win all of Spike Lee's money. That is reprehensible and ridiculous. And let's say, hypothetically for a moment, that it was George Zimmerman's home. What the hell was he thinking? You don't tweet some guy's address that everybody wants to kill. That's just not okay. That's wrong. And guess what? It makes everybody that is normal and decent angry when people do stuff like that. And what is up with the new Black Panthers $10,000 reward for George Zimmerman? Is that even legal? I mean, I would think that, they could be arrested for that. I don't even know what they're saying. Are they saying, bring me George Zimmerman's head for $10,000? Again, it makes normal, decent people very angry, and it takes away from the case. Our number is 760-825-0933. I'd love to hear what you think. And then there's Roseanne, sweet, adorable Roseanne. She's about as sweet as salt. Okay, Roseanne Barr, let's face it, she has dropped the bar because she thinks she's hip and trendy. She tweeted George Zimmerman's parents' address. Come on! You know, that's just wrong. What the hell was she thinking? Look, I want to get to the bottom of this as much as anybody. And yeah, I am disgusted by a lot of what has happened, but I don't know all the facts yet. And you don't go around doing crap like that to innocent people. George Zimmerman's parents had nothing to do with this. Neither did that poor little couple that Spike Lee tweeted their address. It is just ridiculous. 760-825-0933. Now, here's the problem. Instead of trying to discuss the facts, these jerks have made it impossible for anyone to try and understand what has happened. I shouldn't say impossible. They've made it difficult. Because what happens is we start talking about what they have said and what they're saying and what they're doing. And we're not talking about Trayvon and George Zimmerman and the case. Now, on websleuths.com, one of the biggest true crime forums in the world, I might add, and if I do say so myself, the best. Love it. People there are fantastic. I mean, they're wonderful people. But on that discussion of Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, it is making people crazy. And they're not, I mean, they are talking about the case, but when they get really mad and upset, they're getting mad and upset about what other people are saying. You know, what Al Sharpton is saying and whoever else, I don't know. Just if somebody else starts spewing all this stupid stuff that has nothing to do with the case, then we start talking about it on Web Sleuths, and then all of a sudden all focus is lost and everybody is calling each other names. So you know what we did? We made it against the rules for in this particular case to discuss what the talking heads, what the media talking heads are saying. You can't bring up what Al Sharpton or Rush Limbaugh or anybody is saying about this case. You know why? We just couldn't, it wasn't making the discussion wasn't flowing at all. Our moderators were losing their minds because of all the alerts. And guess what happened when we did that? The alerts on all the posts that were, going against our, violating our terms of service, they pretty much dried up. It's been running very smoothly since then. Since we said, hey, we can't talk about what these other jerks are saying. We just have to talk about the facts and the theories. Everything became okay. And I think that's what we need to do as a country. Let's just get back to the facts of the case and not worry about trying to get George Zimmerman's parents or trying to get Trayvon's parents or whatever. It just makes me so angry. I don't know. And we'll talk a lot more about it. Richard Hornsby will be joining us in a little bit. And, Richard is on the line. Richard, are you there? Hold on one second, Richard. You'll be coming on live in a second. There you go. Richard, are you there, my dear?
I am.
Okay, great. We'll be talking about the whole George Zimmerman Trayvon case in just a little bit. That's just my soapbox that I get on every week, and I spew my own stuff. And then we get to talking about the cases. But first off, I want to talk about Susan Powell. Now, to recap, Susan Powell went missing on a cold December night. Her husband, Josh, claimed they went camping, and Susan left them. And he took his two young boys camping when it was, I don't know, zero and a snowstorm. Anyway, we all know that what he did, he killed Susan. Then he moved up to Washington to be near his father. His father, Josh's father, turned out to be one of the biggest perverts around. Newly released evidence shows he had pictures of Susan's face on naked women's bodies, yeah, just a real nice guy. And anyway, as it became apparent to Josh that he was about to be discovered, he blew up his house with the two innocent boys in it. And now everybody's asking the question, why in the hell wasn't he arrested before he was given the chance to do that, or at the very least, not allowed to see his sons, especially since the police have released the latest information. And Richard Hornsby, I don't know if you're aware of what has been released in the Susan Powell case, but it's pretty explosive. Let me tell you some of the things. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to, you know, I agree. It's that the case confounds everybody, but I don't think law enforcement realistically thought he would take his own children's life.
Well, I don't think that, I thought he would, honestly. I thought he'd kill the boys. I didn't think he'd do it like that. I just thought he would put a bullet in their head. It didn't surprise me at all. And I don't know why law enforcement didn't really think of it. And the thing we have to remember, too, family court is not bound by the same standards as a criminal court, as you well know, Richard. So all you had to go in there and just say, look, there appears to be impropriety here, and the children most, you know, could likely be in danger. You don't even need to have solid proof. It's just the possibility. And I just, the whole thing is so frustrating. Now, let me tell you what has...
You say that, but we have a great example of that same scenario here in Florida where a judge had took the same position that, you know, with Michelle Parker, she went missing and her ex-fiance, Dale Smith, is the prime suspect, but yet, you know, the parents couldn't keep the children, you know, he has custody of the children now because the judge found, because it's not just whether or not you suspect that person of the death, you have to have some proof that the children themselves are in danger, and that's where I think that you had the problem. It can't be based on pure suspicion.
Well, I just, to me, as a layperson, wouldn't the children be in danger if the husband is the one who killed the mom?
Couldn't well, absolutely. You say, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I'm just saying...
It's the law. I understand. There's the law, and then there's what's logical, as we know.
Time when the judge made the decision, he didn't know that the father. You know, I don't think he knew everything law enforcement had. Like it's, you know, and I don't know the case as well as I know some other cases, but it appeared that law enforcement had found blood in the house, and that apparently wasn't brought to the family court judge's attention,
right,
if I'm correct. And you know, and that would probably played a large role in if the judge had known that.
Kim, sir, what were you going to say?
Well, there was another case that happened a little bit prior to when the boys were killed, and it was I can't remember the name of the case, but the mom, it was about a set of twins, and
mm-hmm.
they did take those kids away from the dad and leave them with the family, and then he was arrested soon after that. I think that there should be some leeway. I think that family court might be afraid to do these things because then if they're accusing, then the person of interest or whatever could come back on them or something. I don't know why they're doing it, but I think that I really do think that there should be some more leeway for family court in these murder situations or missing situations to be able to put the kids in a safe place until they know for sure.
Exactly. And here's the other thing that we need to ask the question of the police. Why didn't you bring this forward to family court? Why didn't you go to the family and say, hey, look, we're a little concerned about this situation, and here's the deal. The police are going to have a lot to answer for in this. And let me tell you what else they have found in the Susan Powell case. They found a letter from Susan saying, please don't show this to Josh. It says if she dies, it's not an accident, even if it looks like one. Blood was found on the tile in the home. Fans trained on a couch that was wet, and the rug that was wet. Now, police are not talking publicly as to why they didn't arrest, but even the police in Washington State, and forgive me, but I forget the city and town, a spokesman or perhaps one of the police officers recently said, if we would have had this much evidence, if this had been our case, we would have arrested him. And, you know, it's just so hard on the heart to think that, you know, if, and that's a terrible way to go through life, but you can't help it in this case. I take it Kiersey is not called in, Kim, sir?
No,
she
I haven't
okay.
heard from her yet.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. Yeah, something. It's LDS conference this weekend, and so I know she's quite busy with that. So we'll try and catch her next time. But Richard Hornsby, let's go to the case that everybody is talking about. And that is the case of Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. Now, let me get back to this here. I want to point a hypothetical out to you. We have Richard Hornsby on the phone. He is a very well-respected, renowned attorney in Florida, and he always puts things in perspective for us, even when we're upset. But I want to put a hypothetical out there, and you tell me what you think of this. Here's a hypothetical, pretend, imagine. Let's say Trayvon was there to rob houses. Let's say he was the aggressor. And the only thing that George Zimmerman did was get out of his car and stand there and stare at him. Remember, this is just a hypothetical. Since Zimmerman was not a cop, in that scenario, could Trayvon have felt threatened by him for just being a stranger staring at him? And then you have to ask yourself, would Trayvon be alive today if George Zimmerman was not carrying a gun? Okay, now, Richard Hornsby from RichardHornsby.com, what say you on this hypothetical scenario? Let's say it's presented that way in court. How would the Florida stand your ground law stand up then?
Well, it's all a question of reasonableness. That's where if Trayvon Martin on your hypothetical was looking to burglarize houses or cars, whatever it may be, and George Zimmerman just stared at him, and then Trayvon Martin attacked him because he felt threatened. Well, under that scenario, Trayvon Martin isn't entitled to raise self-defense because he's in the act of committing a felony. Okay, so that wouldn't apply. But let's go to the more general scenario, which is if Trayvon Martin was walking through there and he saw George Zimmerman, and remember, it's not like George Zimmerman was hiding in bushes and things like that. There's no evidence to suggest that. You know, George Zimmerman had every right to follow Trayvon Martin, regardless of whether or not he was profiling him or not. He had every right to at least follow him. But if Trayvon Martin felt threatened, the first question is, could Trayvon Martin have approached him and attacked him? Again, it's a question of reasonableness. Would a reasonable person have felt that would have been the best course of action to keep themselves from being watched by this other person? I guess if that's even defensible. I don't know. Now, if Trayvon Martin would have approached him in general and said, hey, what are you doing? And then George Zimmerman looked like he was going for a gun. Could Trayvon Martin attack him at that point? Absolutely. You know, but the whole question, again, is one of reasonableness. And I told you guys last week, I don't even think this is technically a stand-your-ground law as far as the main issue, whether or not George Zimmerman had to retreat. There's only one of two things that could have happened. Either George Zimmerman provoked the fight, in which case he's not, he would be considered not only the aggressor, but his use of the gun wouldn't have been reasonable. Or Trayvon Martin really got the better of George Zimmerman. And even under the old law, George Zimmerman, since he didn't have the ability to retreat, since he was on the ground, would have been allowed to use his gun. I mean, and that's what George Zimmerman said. So if that's not true, well, then George Zimmerman's guilty. It doesn't matter what other scenarios or theories you come up with. Either George Zimmerman's version of the events is true or it's not. And if it is true, he's entitled to self-defense even under the old law. And if it's not true, well, he's lying and he's not entitled to defend himself.
You know, I love the way you put things, Richard, because you make it all of a sudden, all of this negative energy just disseminates around me and it goes away, and I think, yeah, that's what that it's kind of basic when you get down to it. Now, I've read, I'm sure you've read the same stories about experts saying that they've been able to basically say it's not George Zimmerman calling for help. Now, they do this by taking a recording of George Zimmerman, like they've taken from the 911 call, and comparing it, and they can say fairly certain that they feel it's not him calling for help. So that would leave Trayvon Martin calling for help. In that scenario, how would that look to a jury or the law? How would that weight the case?
Listen, that's not going to be good. That's not good at all. Because the way I understand that it goes is that you hear a yelling for help and then all of a sudden you hear a gunshot. Is that your understanding?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if that's the facts and the experts, and again, I give experts a grain of salt at this point because, anybody, you just call somebody up out of the blue and not to have, voice samples compared against and things like that. But let's say that experts got in the stand and testified and that, that's not going to look good for George Zimmerman, and that would, again, that would conflict with his version of the story. And if a jury doesn't believe George Zimmerman's version of the story, well, then that means George Zimmerman has to be guilty. That's the problem. And so that's not good for George Zimmerman by any stretch of the means.
And that you bring up a good point, and that's about experts. You know, when I was a youngster 10 years ago and I got into this true crime discussion thing, I believed what everybody said if they were an expert. It never occurred to me that they would be wrong or lie or do something just to get on TV. We have to remember now that just because someone's an expert doesn't mean they're an expert at all. And even if they really are an expert, they could be wrong. So again, you have all these variables. But yeah, that part doesn't look good. Okay, I want to talk about, and I hope somebody calls in, because I know there's a lot of people in chat, but I'd like others to call in. Our number is 760-825-0933. That's 760-825-0933. We're talking with Richard Hornsby, and we're talking about the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case. And a friend of mine emailed me something very, very interesting about Trayvon's earbuds. And this is something that I had never thought of. Trey's girlfriend said she was on the phone with him when all of this happened. She thinks she heard George hit Trayvon and the phone went dead. She said Trey was wearing earbuds. Now, earbuds coming out of your ear would not necessarily disconnect the phone, okay? So we kind of have to think, okay, maybe sometimes if you drop it on the ground and it's, you know, smashes and the batteries comes out, yeah, maybe that's what happened. Now, police are saying her story does not mesh with what they have as far as the times. She never called the phone back after this happened. No other calls went to his phone. And the family will not turn over Trayvon's phone records to law enforcement. Comments, Richard Hornsby?
Well, one, law enforcement could have gotten Trayvon. They could have easily subpoenaed his phone records and her phone records. So I don't think, I just think that's ridiculous that law enforcement's, you know, placing the blame on the family. But I think it's ridiculous the family won't turn over the phone records. Here's the thing. The girlfriend didn't exactly come forward the day after this occurred, you know.
Right.
And that's the thing I'm starting to get a little concerned with is you have a lot of people that seem to be suddenly coming forward with all this, I guess testimony and evidence that would be favorable to Trayvon Martin, but you know, where were they when the first few weeks? Just you know, and that's why I'm a little bit questionable of, you know, because anybody can say anything they want, you know, once they know all the facts, they know how to make a story fit into the facts. We've seen that with the Casey Anthony case, and so that's why I'm a little bit questionable of this girlfriend, because that would have been like one of the first things I would have come forward with. She didn't come forward until this started coming a bigger deal in the media and stuff. But law enforcement could have gotten her phone records in a heartbeat. They would have had no problem, you know, subpoenaing those and a judge signing off on it. And I'm sure they have those, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
My heart goes out to the family, but here's the thing. You know, if you have phone records that supposedly will refute, you know, George Zimmerman, well, you should release those to the media. You shouldn't say we had it. It's just like, you know, everybody was saying, oh, they're attacking the family about Trayvon, you know, possibly using marijuana. Well, no, the reason everybody was up in arms is the family lied about why he was suspended. And
right.
So they painted a false picture of Trayvon Martin so that they could get this, you know, media outcry on their behalf. And that's why people are now questioning who is really Trayvon Martin, because the family lied about the real reason he was suspended. So that's just another issue that, again, that goes towards the family's credibility, you know, in what they're seeking.
And you're right about that. And unfortunately, what happens, we're talking with Richard Hornsby, richardhornsby.com, about the Trayvon Martin case. Unfortunately, when the family does that, what happens is it takes away from the case. You don't lie. You let everything out. You tell everything, all of the good and the bad, because now, like you said, people are going, now, wait a minute, if the family's lying about that, are they lying about this? You know, and again, it takes away from the facts of the case. If they had come out and said, yeah, he smoked a little pot, I think everybody would have gone, well, you know, he sure didn't deserve to be shot if he was a kid and smoked pot. I mean, how many kids have done that? But now you're going, okay, well, they've lied about that. What else are they lying about? And does it really have anything to do with the case? I don't know. I just don't know. Kim, sir, do we have we do have a caller, and it's RBNW2. Richard Hornsby, do you mind taking a few calls with us tonight?
Sure, no problem. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to area code 740 with RBNW2. Go ahead, my dear.
Hi. I was just wondering if this is about Susan Powell.
Okay.
If they find out that Stephen Powell had anything to do with this or had knowledge, can they charge him with her murder?
They can charge him as an accessory after the fact, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
If they found out that he participated in the planning, they can charge him with her murder. Do not be surprised if the police are trying to look at that angle, because I'm here to tell you, as I live and breathe, that man knows something. And would it surprise anybody if Stephen Powell, Josh Powell's dad, knew about the murder beforehand? I don't think anybody would be surprised. This guy is a creepy, scummy old man, and he should just rot in prison. But that's a very good question. Richard Hornsby, you know about the criminal system, maybe not in Utah, but Florida and Utah, they have a lot in common. What do you think, if they could prove that he knew about the murder beforehand, could they charge him with accessory?
Well, it depends. I mean, if they've asked him about it and they find out he lied, they can charge him with, you know, obstruction of justice. If they find that he helped, hide or any way, they could charge him with an accessory after the fact to some type of thing. So, I mean, he could definitely be charged with something. Whether or not he could be charged with the actual murder, unless he was actually conspiring to help in the murder, I don't think he could be charged with necessarily the murder. But I'm sure they could find plenty of charges. And from what I understand, he's got enough problems with what was found on his computer.
Yeah, he's going to be in prison for a long, long time. And just an update, I spoke with, we had Chuck Cox, Susan's father, on the show a few weeks ago. And I asked him, I said, if Stephen Powell knew where Susan was, would you be willing for him to receive a lighter sentence to find her body? And he basically said no. He said if it's a few years, yeah, but if it means he can get out and still be a young man and enjoy his life, it's absolutely not. He said Susan will still be dead. You know, I don't want to.
Right.
It is sad. Basically, he said he didn't want to give him a pass, and good for him. And the Cox family has just been amazing people, and they've really shown.
They are.
They have shown their true colors. They are classy, wonderful, warm, loving. How Mr. Cox, Susan's dad, can be so gracious, I don't know, because I think I would have attacked Josh's dad with my own hands, you know. He was amazing.
And the sister, not the one, the nice one, but I don't remember, the one with the 911 call. I can't remember her name. I have five kids.
Okay. I have one kid and I have trouble. You're talking about the sister?
The one that was living there, basically, near him.
Right.
When
she defends him?
The house exploded.
Yeah, the one that defends him,
She's nuts. I just don't know how. I'm sorry, and just like, I wouldn't be able to defend my family.
No.
I don't think. I don't know. I've never been in that.
Well, no, you wouldn't. I guarantee you, because you have you're decent and you have a heart. It's one thing. If your family does something wrong, that doesn't mean you won't stop loving them, but you have to accept what they have done. And, one of Josh's sisters and Josh's mother have come forward and have accepted it all. And they've been very, very good and very honest about everything. But the rest of the family has just been terrible, just terrible. Josh Powell's family has just been awful. RBNW2, is there anything else you'd like to ask before we go?
No, because I don't want to get into the Trayvon Martin case. It's too explosive for me. I hope whatever happens, there's justice there. So.
Exactly. Fair justice. Thank you so much, my dear. And feel free to call in
thank
at 760-825-0933. If you would like to join us with the discussion, we're talking with attorney Richard Hornsby from richardhornsby.com. And we're talking about the Trayvon Martin case and George Zimmerman. Richard Hornsby, let me back up here. I get so upset just talking about it, because I have one side, and I think a lot of people feel this way, where I am so upset and angry at George Zimmerman for having that gun and doing that, you know. And then I'm thinking, well, did Trayvon really attack him? But you know, and then I go back to the help, you know, the help on the 911 call. If it really was Trayvon, boy, it just, I guess what I'm trying to say in my babbling here, what do you think happened from what you know right now?
I think at some point they you know, they confront each other. When I say confront, I mean George Zimmerman probably, I think he had every right to say, hey, who are you? What are you doing here? And I think at that point, I don't know, just for some reason, I kind of think George Zimmerman's general version of the facts makes more sense than George Zimmerman, you know, because getting out of his car and literally chasing him down and you know, like a full-on vigilante. But I agree. See, I still like guns, so I still get the point of, I don't, you know, if he wouldn't have had the gun, we wouldn't be here. But, you know, we could be having a separate story where, or probably wouldn't even be talking about it, where what if, you know, Trayvon really did jump George Zimmerman? I don't know, but from the little bit of evidence that comes out, it just seems more logical that, you know, at some point Trayvon did have the better of George Zimmerman. And, you know, we keep getting to, I hear, like, on Web Sleuths, I kind of lost my cool and I stopped posting on there because people are like, he was stalking Trayvon. Well, stalking is if you're hiding in the bushes and you're trying to hide. You know, from what we know, George Zimmerman parked his car on the side of the road as he's getting ready to go to the store and saw a strange person. That's not racist when you see a strange person that's walking in between houses. You know, I'm not saying, you know, and so I don't know, I guess is my thing. I just think from the little bit of information we have, George Zimmerman's in general makes more sense, you know, and mm-hmm. Here's some things that are going to surprise people, especially on Web Sleuths. Listen, the fact that he was arrested for battering a law enforcement officer will never be admitted in a criminal case. It's not admissible in a court, you know, anything that, if you weren't convicted of it, it's not admissible in court, period.
And one thing, too, to remember, it was a plainclothes cop. I don't think he knew it was a cop. I'm not excusing it. That just adds a little something to it. So.
Right, and that was 7 years ago, too. Listen, mm-hmm. You know, when I was younger, I used to get in arguments at the drop of a dime. So that's
no.
One thing. The other thing, this dating violence injunction that he got against him, that's not going to be admissible in court. Is it, you know, some of these people coming forward and say, oh, George started a fight with me, that's not going to be admissible in his criminal case at all, because the only type of evidence of violence that is admissible would be if, one, either Trayvon Martin knew of prior instances of violence from George Zimmerman, or if George Zimmerman had a reputation within his community during this time of being a violent person. And it's a very specific, you know, sentence you have to say. You have to say, I live in the community with George Zimmerman. I know him to have a violent, you know, character. And you're not going to find anybody that lives in that neighborhood that thinks of George Zimmerman that specific way, which is the way the law requires. So I don't know. You know, it's – I agree with you. I'm not a big gun guy, so that's why it infuriates me. But at the same time, it just – you know, his head having injuries in the back, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense if George Zimmerman was the aggressor.
Well, that's true. That's a very good point. Somebody brought up a point in the chat room just a moment ago. It was Margie Oliver, and she was saying that racism is alive and well. It is, and I wanted to clarify, I still believe it's alive and well. I think it's better than when I was growing up, but I think it's still there. And like I said earlier, I am certainly not going to comment on what the African-American experience is, because growing up in Utah, that would just be so arrogant and ridiculous of me. So I guess
but
what
kind
saying,
of racism? I mean, that's the thing. People are saying racism. Well, we having reports, again, they're unsubstantiated, that the detective apparently wanted to seek an arrest of George Zimmerman. So how can, either he's racist or he's not. Either Sanford PD is racist or not. But if he's trying to seek it, and then we have the elected state attorney who's coming forward and saying, you know, I don't think that we have enough right now. Let's keep looking for evidence. Well, that's not racist.
That's not
smart,
racist. Exactly.
You know, prosecutorial work. You know, then you have, you know, suddenly Sanford's racist, and they're wanting, you know, and they're, well, listen, the only person that can arrest George Zimmerman have George Zimmerman arrested at this time was the prosecutor, who's an elected countywide official. It's not just Seminole County. I mean, Sanford, it's Seminole County and Brevard. Norm Wolfinger is the elected prosecutor for Seminole County and Brevard. He has the highest conviction rate in the state of Florida for felony cases. You know, I don't know. I think people are looking for racism when it's really not there. I mean, And I already told you my feelings about George Zimmerman now being the white Hispanic. You know, either you're Hispanic or you're white. It's like, you know, I don't see us calling, you know, Barack Obama the white, you know, black man.
Right.
I don't know. You know, he's one. You're one or the other. I think people are looking for racism where it really doesn't exist. I think this is just an unfortunate situation that where you have a law that is probably where the frustration. And here's where the law needs to change. They should have probably arrested George Zimmerman. Whatever my theory is, if someone dies, they should arrest somebody, and then that person can prove his defense, you know, in a court.
Right.
That would be the better place, the way to do it.
Exactly, and you're right. And that's the other point that I too want to bring up, is when you yell racism at everything, it dilutes it. It dilutes it, and it makes people go, well, okay, here we go again. You know, and I guess what I'm saying is no one can deny it's still out there, but when you look at things logically, don't throw the racism card at it just because somebody is doing their job, like taking the time to look at the evidence. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, then again, let me just, and maybe it's my, you know, it's my liberal, white liberal guilt, as they call it. But, you know, how many times have people in the African American community, you know, for years on end, been treated so horribly by law enforcement? So you can understand why they would, you know, a large group of people would be upset that something hasn't happened here. But then again, you need to step back and take a look at just the facts. And that's why if we can just look at the facts and not listen to the people spewing all this hatred and all of these lies and all this inflammatory crap, if we can just look at the facts, then we can find out what happened, or at least hopefully be reasonably certain what happened. Let's talk about when he was a bouncer, when George Zimmerman was a bouncer. I have some information here about that. Let's see, where is that? He was a bouncer, supposedly, and threw a girl across the room. He would have been 17 at the time when this happened in 2001, and this was given out by an unnamed source. Again, that's certainly not going to be admitted, is it?
Well, no, and why weren't criminal charges pressed? Just because you're a bouncer doesn't give you a right to start throwing people around.
Right.
Again, this is like like Trayvon's girlfriend coming forward like a few weeks later and suddenly saying she had a full-on discussion, but no one ever heard of it before then. You know, it's just very coincidental to me that type of information comes out.
Well, don't you think, though, Richard Hornsby, we're talking with Richard Hornsby, richardhornsby.com, an amazing attorney from Florida who helps keep myself and other members of Web Sleuths calm when the emotions are running high, keeps us calm with the facts. Don't you think that charges will be filed? I do believe that. But I just don't see how he can be found not guilty. I don't see how he can be found guilty. I mean, wait.
Well,
I
agree with you, but
no.
If that audio, you know,
Atlanta
Sentinel's report on the experts, that's a pretty big deal. If you can get two experts to come in and say, you know, that listen, that's the kid screaming, not because that blows George Zimmerman's whole entire thing out of the water. Because why would Trayvon Martin be on top of him screaming for help? Unless, you know, yeah, because the bullet comes after you hear the things. So that, you know, that's a pretty big issue right there. But aside from that, everything says he should be found not guilty. And like I think I said last week, a judge could actually throw out the whole case before it even gets to a jury.
I'm being confusing here because I want to make sure I say the right thing. What I said there was confusing. I'm talking about the emotional side. Let's forget about the evidence for a second. We go to court with George Zimmerman. Don't you think that no matter what the evidence is, what I'm saying, he will be found guilty? I do. I don't think there is a jury that will find this man not guilty. I don't think it'll happen.
Listen, if Casey Anthony can be found not guilty, anybody can be found not guilty.
Well,
so
you know,
I gotta disagree with you on
point.
That one.
That's a great point.
There's probably going to be one. You got to remember that majority of Seminole County, where if he kept the trial here, is white conservative. It's a Republican stronghold. you know, I'll listen, and so that's one thing you need to keep in consideration. But let's say the case gets transferred, like Casey Anthony's, or we bring a jury, we do one or the other. You know, we either move the jury venue or we bring a jury here, like we did in Casey Anthony. Well, you gotta rule out Miami. You know, the only other places would be left would possibly be Jacksonville, where that prosecutor's from, and that's a military area that's pro Republican. You know, that's not good for Trayvon Martin's family. Pensacola would be the other likely area that you'd get somebody from. There's not, you know, a lot of people are sympathetic to George Zimmerman, but they're just not coming forward because they're labeled a racist the minute they say anything that's pro George Zimmerman. So I kind of think that he probably will be able to get a decent jury.
I maybe you're right and maybe I'm wrong, but I just think the guy's already been convicted. And, you know, honestly, I don't know. I really don't know. I am truly on the fence, but you and I agree on this. If he just hadn't had that gun, that's what bothers me. He wasn't a cop. He was there with a gun. And, you know, even if Trayvon was there to break in, that doesn't mean he deserved to die. And
that's the thing. A lot of people disagree with you on that one. If you're running around, I mean, there is no more sacred place than your home. I mean, and so if someone's looking to break into somebody's homes, I mean, you know, that is, can you get anything more dangerous than that? This is Florida, and Seminole County is not like Orlando, and it's, you know, it's not as progressive as Orlando. It's still a very conservative area, and Florida in general is. And Florida, a lot of people believe, you know, that, you know, a lot of people I don't think are as sympathetic to the Trayvon Martin as you would believe, that the national media has you believe in Florida, because, listen, I mean, think about what George Zimmerman's going to say. He's going to say, listen, yeah, I'm captain of this neighborhood watch. We've had a rash of break-ins in the past, of burglaries, of, you know, of whatever, and I saw a suspicious character, and he's probably going to say, I said, identify yourself, and this guy attacked me. You know, it's not going to be admissible that he had, I mean, well, it may be admissible he had Skittles, but George Zimmerman's not going to know he had Skittles or iced tea. And he's going to say, then he was bashing my head, and I didn't know what to do. I think the tide's shifting, and you're not. I disagree.
Well, we'll see what happens. I just can't. I guess what I'm saying is, I think he's just a stupid. If a kid is breaking in, and I understand, yeah, it's horrible and dangerous. And if someone's breaking into my house, if I was in the house, yeah, I can see shooting somebody if they're coming in your house while you're sitting there, because you have no idea if they're coming in to kill you or to steal anything. But if you're some guy outside watching somebody else break in, you call the police or you go over and say, hey, I can see you, run, you know, or something. That's my point, is he wasn't a cop. He wasn't in the house if Trayvon was going to break into a house, he wasn't sitting inside the house. And so that's what I mean when I say he didn't deserve to die, even if he was breaking in. It'd be a different story if he was breaking in and the person was sitting there. I think that's just not even a question.
Ask yourself this question, because this is what the real question is going to be. The question is going to be, did he deserve to die if he's bashing George Zimmerman's head against the sidewalk? I mean, that's probably the better question to ask, because this isn't like, there's no evidence that George Zimmerman pulled his gun out like he was some, you know, secret agent and was waving it around. I mean, I've heard people say that he pulled his gun out and he was stalking this kid. Again, he followed a kid. He was on the phone with 911. You know, that's not really that out of the ordinary for someone to call 911 and follow the kid. And the fact that he apparently had his gun with him even before he even saw Trayvon Martin. I mean, if he carries it naturally, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with it in general, morally, but I think legally, if Trayvon Martin's the one who instigated the fight, well, you know, it's unfortunate that he's where he's at, but that's, I think gun rights people will tell you, well, that's why people should be allowed to carry their guns, is for situations like that.
Oh, man, that scares me. It's going to be a case, I think, that it's going to be a long, hot summer, let's put it that way. And I think it's going to be a case that just raises everybody's emotions to incredible levels. Hey, we still might have Kirstie Hallowell coming on the phone. So everybody hang on. We're going to she'll be calling in here shortly. And we'll be talking with her briefly about the Susan Powell case. But I just want to get back to Trayvon Martin for just a little bit. what goes on now? The grand jury meets in April. How long would it take, do you think?
Well, there's not going to be – she's already said she's not using a grand jury.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay, see, I'm far behind here. Okay, so now what's the next step?
Well, the special in Florida, you don't. In Florida, the only time you have to use a grand jury is if you're trying to indict somebody for first degree murder and you're seeking the death penalty. Otherwise, you can file what's by called information. It's called a direct file. The prosecutor can say, okay, these are the charges I think apply, and I charge them directly. Mm-hmm. The special prosecutor that's been assigned, this lady Angela, I forget her last name, she said that she thinks she'll be able to make a decision by the end of this week about whether charges should be filed, and if so, what charges will be filed. And so what will happen is she'll make her decision. She'll file charges. Once charges are filed, a warrant will automatically be issued for George Zimmerman's arrest. And if he doesn't turn himself in, which I'm sure there's probably plans for him to do, then they would go and they would arrest him. And then from there, the process would start, just like in Casey Anthony. We would start moving. The two big things I think you'll see is, first, there will be a pretrial hearing. It's called asking the judge to dismiss the charges will probably be like a few months down the road, because and ask the judge to find as a matter of law that George Zimmerman was engaged in self-defense. If the judge grants it, that's the end of the case. It's over. If the judge denies it, well, then it would go to a jury trial.
Okay. And then that's where the stress and the everything else really begins. I'm trying to figure out how to put this. With Trayvon Martin, we know, let's just go through the facts really quickly, and then we're going to get back to Susan Powell. Okay. We know the fact is he was walking. We know the fact that George Zimmerman called the police dispatcher and said there's somebody suspicious. And then the fact was that he was shot and killed. That's really the only stone facts that we know, correct?
I mean, as far as I know, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And I guess what I'm trying to tell people is when you come on Web Sleuths, that's what we know. It's okay to put your theories out there. It's okay to do all of that and say, what if this, what if that, what if this? But let's just try and keep the heat down on this case. Let's just try and talk about it like adults. Because until we know more, and I agree with what one poster posted, that I think this case is going to rest now on that phone call. And if they can really say it was Trayvon calling for help, then George Zimmerman's case is really, really in trouble. But the last thing we need in this country is to be divided more. And this case, I'm so afraid, is going to divide so many people. And I just hope we can take a step back and do our best not to let it divide us, but I think that's too much to hope for. Richard Hornsby, hang on, because we have Susan Powell's best friend on the phone, Kiersey Hallowell. Kiersey, hi, are you there? Whoops, hold on one second. Hold on one second, Kiersey, okay? Can you hang tight for just one second?
Uh-huh.
Okay, hold on. Let's just take a caller really quickly here. Area code 215, are you there, my dear? Area code 215.
Yes, I'm here. How are you doing today?
Good. Did you have a question?
Well, I really had a short comment. I know you're somebody on the show right now. This case has been very, very, very ugly, and the reason for that. I mean, I think blacks have one reasons to be angry and suspicious. I really think they do. All the racism that do exist in this country, you know, in New York alone, 60 of the last shootings by police officers were people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And 35 of them were unarmed.
Mm.
So, you know, there's a lot of suspicions. So whenever you see a black and white issue, they're always going to jump on the bandwagon and come up with it. What I don't like about this case is that people are making things up.
Right.
There is so much things being made up here. I was talking to a guy today who said, he's a racist. He said that. I said, what made him a racist? He said, well, when he said that all these a-holes get away. I said, but it's true. Criminals do get away. That's not necessarily meaning it was black. But that was his assumption of why racism was involved in this. You know, I really think that they would convict him. Mm-hmm. And not because he's, even if he's innocent, they will convict him. Just
I
to
think so
ease our everything. They don't want to see a race riot to something.
I agree.
Really
I think you're absolutely right.
Will he get a fair trial is the question now. Will Silverman actually get a fair trial? You know, because of so much pressure on this. So this is my concern right now. Now, if the guy's guilty, of course, hang him high.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, wait for the facts, people, before you start jumping into things. And this race car, you can't play it all the time. And this is why a lot of people do not believe a lot of stuff that happens because of the race cars.
Exactly.
And I tell you, I'm Latino. I am Latino. And I have seen a lot of racism towards my people, towards blacks, all my life.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not racial, don't call it racial.
There you go.
If he's a criminal, he's a criminal. Simple as that. If he's a criminal, let the cops do their job, lock him up, and support the police officer. Now, if you see a race issue, and you see a cop beating on someone, and he's doing something illegal, then report that police officer. But don't jump on bandwagons just because everybody else is doing it. And these celebrities... they get me so pissy, celebrities. Anyway, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm going to vote for you for president. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. That was a great call. Great way to wrap up that conversation. Let's go to Kiersey. Hello, well, Kiersey, no need to apologize, my dear. You have so much on your mind, and I know you've had a busy weekend with your family. Kiersey is Susan Powell's best friend, and it's been a very stressful week for you, I know, with this information being released. Tell us what the Cox family has said and your thoughts about the latest information released about the evidence that police found concerning the Susan Powell case. They found a letter with Susan saying, don't tell Josh about this, and if I die and it looks like an accident, it probably isn't, basically. Blood on the tile. Just things that are very, very upsetting. Kiersey Hallowell, welcome, and thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Tell us what the Cox family has been saying and your thoughts about what's been going on.
Well, I've watched some interviews that Cox, Susan's father, did, and he basically said that he had no idea there was this much evidence of pointing towards looking like Josh murdered Susan, and that he thought he should have been arrested a long time ago. I called him on Friday night right after I heard the news, and I said, we've always tried to be really supportive of the police. You know, what are we supposed to say or not say? Because I don't want to make things worse. And he said, you can just basically say what you feel. If you feel like he should have been arrested, that's okay. And so, you know, that I was really shocked. I was really pretty horrified when I heard that they had blood, even though it was a small amount probably, and they had Josh in total lies saying that he didn't know where Susan was and she was at work and he'd called her and left a voicemail when he knew very well that her cell phone was sitting right in the van.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that he didn't have a phone charger, and the policeman looked in the car and he saw a phone charger with the phone plugged into it,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that he had a shovel and a gas can in the van, I mean, all those things, and the safe deposit box, I didn't know about that either. So all those things are extremely shocking and kind of horrifying to me that they had that much evidence. And
what was in the safe deposit? What was in the safe deposit box? Was there...
In the safe deposit box, from what I've read, was a letter from Susan.
That the letter, right.
And, yeah, she was the only one who had access to it, and she had put a letter in there so that nobody could get it, especially Josh, saying, basically, whoever reads this, if I'm dead and it looks like an accident, it probably isn't, and saying that she doesn't trust Josh at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember if that part had the stuff about Steve Powell, but it was either there or her journals where the police mentioned in the search warrant that she didn't want her kids or herself around Steve Powell, despised him, and wished Josh would cut him out of their lives also.
We're talking with Kiersey Hallowell. She is Susan Powell's best friend. We also have attorney Richard Hornsby from Florida, richardhornsby.com. We're talking about the latest evidence in the Susan Powell case. This is Web Sleuths Radio. My name is Tricia. Kiersey, what is, I really have to watch what I say, because sometimes what I'm thinking and what I mean to say sometimes come out as two totally different things. But there was a journal that I'm aware of. Are you able to talk about that yet?
No, I'm still not really allowed to talk about that.
Okay, then we won't talk about it. I do know that when she worked at the bank, Susan Powell did tell some of her coworkers there that she was afraid of Josh. That, you know, there things were not well with Josh. They were aware of that. So, why do you think the police didn't arrest? I mean, we're just lay people here, and we've already had Richard Hornsby tell us why, and we'll have Richard repeat that in just a minute. But, Kiersey, why do you think they didn't arrest him?
Well, I know for a fact that they were extremely, extremely worried about making sure that they had enough for a conviction, because they didn't want to arrest him and have it go to trial and then have the jury decide that it wasn't enough and have him walk free, and then they could never try him again, even if they found Susan's body later on. And I think they were very afraid that if they did that, and then they would fail all of us that just counted on them and depended on them, that since Susan was ripped away from us, and then maybe if there wasn't enough evidence that her murderer could walk free, and the boys would still wouldn't be safe because they would be returned to Josh's custody if he was set free.
Exactly. And that's the scariest thought of all. So perhaps the cops were just being too cautious. Unfortunately, as Richard Hornsby, our other guest, pointed out earlier, they didn't think that he would kill the kids. I thought he would. In fact, you and I may have even talked about this, Kiersey. It didn't surprise me at all. It surprised me in the way that it happened. Richard Hornsby, also that came out that of the police in Washington State said if they had this evidence, they would have arrested him. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. You know, it's very damaging evidence. And again, you know, every police department has different reasons and motivations for why they do things. And it's always difficult to second guess somebody, you know, but it's always easier to do it, though, when the second guessing suggests that you had been right and because we already know that their decision was wrong.
Right, that's true. It is easy, much easier to second guess. Do you know, Kiersey, if there's anything else that they're going to release? I mean, obviously they have to have more evidence than this.
Well, it sounded to me, I watched the press conference with the West Valley Police that they did on Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. I was gone during when all this news broke out, but I watched it afterwards, and it did sound to me like they were saying that they did plan to release more information as they could. As long as it didn't jeopardize whatever current case they had going on.
So there might be many, many other surprises waiting for us. Kiersey, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but Stephen Powell, Josh's father, the really disgusting human being, if there ever was one, do you think he was involved in her disappearance? Meaning, do you think he knew about it beforehand?
I do think he knew about it. I have long thought that he maybe was the mastermind behind it. That's just a personal feeling. I have no proof or anything to back that up. But I do think, even if he wasn't involved with it, I think that he knows everything and knows where she is.
I agree. And it wouldn't surprise me to see if he was the mastermind behind it, because he had Josh like his little puppet. And that in itself was disgusting. Kiersey, we're going to wrap it up here. I know you're busy this weekend, and I want to thank you for calling in, and I know how crazy it gets. Do you have any final thoughts for us?
No, we're just really grateful to the outpouring of love and support from people across the world that continue to care about this case even after over 2 years has gone by.
Well, Kiersey, we are here with you and with the Cox family again, and I will stress this. Anything you need, you let us know, and we'll keep hoping and praying that they find Susan's body so we can at least have somewhat, you never have closure, but at least a little closure and peace for the Cox family, because Lord knows they certainly deserve it. Thank you, Kiersey. You take care and have a great rest of the weekend, okay?
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Richard Hornsby, are you still with us, my dear?
I am. Thanks for having
me. Okay. Oh, well, we're not quite done yet. We still have a little bit. I was just looking in the chat room. And I was just reading one of our posters here, and this poster was saying that the Trayvon Martin case is clearly a race issue. And here's the thing. I don't know. I don't know. If what he said, here's the other thing. We didn't talk about this. I wanted to bring this up. If on the 911 call, if George Zimmerman really did say, and please forgive me, but I want to say it so you know what I'm talking about, if George Zimmerman really did call him a coon, which is just abhorrent to me, don't you think that'll really hurt his case?
Well, of course, if that's what he said, you know. I mean, obviously that would, because that would seem to suggest that he already had an aggressive mentality. And the bottom line is, yes, just like I think it'll hurt his case if some audio expert gets on there and says it was Trayvon Martin, not George Zimmerman, that was crying for help.
Mm-hmm.
That just goes without saying. The bigger question is, does that still, a racist, let's not forget this, a racist has the right to defend themselves regardless, too.
Right.
You know, just because you're of a certain predisposition. And again, this case will boil down to one simple question. Is George Zimmerman's version of the facts the one that occurred, or is it any other version but that? Because if it's any other version but that, George Zimmerman's guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Because George Zimmerman has told them what he says happened, and if they have evidence that suggests that's not what happened, then he's guilty. And even if he is a racist, he's entitled to defend himself if Trayvon Martin is the one who confronted him, because that's just the way it is. So if he said coon, is that gonna help him at all? No, especially if he has African Americans on his jury, it's not gonna help him the least bit. But that's why we have judges and juries to kind of sort through all this stuff and to figure out what occurred and what didn't.
Well, like you said, it will come down to whether he was defending himself or not. But have you heard the enhanced tape of the 911 call? Supposedly, his friend, George Zimmerman's friend, said that George was really calling him a goon. He was saying effing goon is what he was saying. I don't know. To me, it doesn't sound like goon. That's just my opinion. I wouldn't want to be on this jury. Maybe I would. I would love to hear all the facts of the case, and I hope I would be able to make it without the emotion that will be coming along with this. But I happen to agree with our caller earlier, Richard. I think that he will be found guilty, even if he is not guilty, because people will be too afraid of what will happen if he is found not guilty. What do you think?
Well, I think that'll depend on where the jury comes from and where the trial's held. If you hold this case in Pensacola or Jacksonville, I can see those people not being as concerned with what their verdict means to the community, because they're very pro gun right, pro Republican, that type of stuff. If it's held in Seminole County, you're absolutely right. I think that there would be riots in the streets if it's anything but guilty. There's no doubt, but. That's, again, this is why we have change of venues, and this is why we do things like this, to avoid the possibility, to avoid these kind of influences in the jury's deliberations. And I hate to say it, it weighs in George Zimmerman's favor that this is a concern about, worrying about doing the right thing, because you're probably going to get a much more conservative jury panel, because more conservative people are willing to say, listen, I don't care what anybody else thinks. I want to tell you, I'm going to base my verdict on the law and the facts,
mm-hmm.
not on what, the people that are staring me down in the jury, audience are concerned with. And those are going to tend to be more conservative people than they are going to be liberal people, and that's just the facts. So that could end up working to George Zimmerman's favor in the long run if that's a legitimate concern when this thing goes to trial. But I would make this one point. If you take people like Al Sharpton and all these other people at face value, they just want an arrest. And theoretically, if there's an arrest, then they've already said they would be satisfied in the justice system. And I think that'll, what happens if he's arrested, how they act afterwards will go a long way to tell us whether or not they're hypocrites or not.
Exactly. Let me ask you this. One of our people in our chat room brought up a very, very interesting scenario, Wise Old Al. Hypothetically, let's say Trayvon is standing there and George Zimmerman's standing there, and Zimmerman uses a racial slur against Trayvon, and Trayvon clocks him and gets the better of him, and George shoots him. The fact that he instigated it with words, would that law, stand your ground law, would that still work in this case? Or self-defense, I should say.
There's the old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the answer is no. Just because someone calls you a name doesn't give you a right to punch them. You know, I have these cases all the time where someone says, oh, he called me this name, so I hit him. Well, no, that doesn't give you any rights. So Trayvon Martin didn't have the right to, if that happened, wouldn't have had the right to deck him. And if Trayvon Martin would have decked him and then got him in a place where he couldn't retreat, well, George Zimmerman would have been within his right, and that wouldn't be something legally that would prohibit George Zimmerman from using self-defense. But again, remember, a jury would be told, you have to find that he felt his use of deadly force was reasonable under the circumstances. You know, mm-hmm. and so it all comes down to whether or not when he pulled that gun out, he reasonably believed he had no other alternative.
Right. Well, Richard Hornsby, once again, you have brought this case and the facts to us in a wonderful manner that we can all accept and digest and understand. And I can't tell you from the bottom of my heart how much I appreciate you coming on the show and explaining things to us. And I know the members of Web Sleuth feel the same way. And I hope you'll come on again soon. I have a feeling we'll be talking a lot over the summer.
No problem. Look forward to it.
Thank you, my dear. Take care. Okay, Kimster, are you still there, my darling? Kimster.
I'm here.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap things up, but we still have the Web Sleuth Hot Cold Case. Tell us about that, Kim.
Yes, we do. This week's Hot Cold Case is about Danielle Jean Louis. And she was murdered in Van Cleek, Ontario, Canada. We have one out of the United States this week. Danielle Jean Louis, as she was known, was last seen alive at the Windsor House Hotel in Van Cleek Hill, Ontario, at approximately 12:30 a.m. on March 1st, 1992. At 1:30 a.m. March 1st, 1992, she spoke with a female friend on the telephone from her residence located at 63 Mill Street, Van Cleek Hill, Ontario. Later on March 1st, at approximately 11 a.m., she was found dead in her bed and she had been smothered. Mm. Her sister has contacted Web Sleuth and she said it's been 20 years and she would like Danielle showcased to help find her killer. She's going to be getting more information out to the members of websleuth.com very soon as she is digging into the case herself as well. So there's not a lot of information yet on the board, but it is coming. And she is being showcased. She's on the front page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see her picture and a link there. Push click here and you'll go straight to the page and get caught up and be sure to come back for when her sister starts posting there.
Well, this will be very interesting to have a case out of the country on Web Sleuth. But again, that just proves that Web Sleuth reaches far and wide. And you, my friend out there listening, can make a difference in somebody's life. Again, we want to stress, you know, don't feel like you have to come on Web Sleuth and solve the case and be the hero. Just come on and say we're thinking of you. If you feel like you don't want to look at the case or you don't think you have anything to offer, you do have something to offer, and that's just your encouragement. So please come on. You can always register. Just come on websleuth.com/forums, and you'll see a little tab up at the top. I believe it says register, and you just click on that, and there you go. You're all set. Well, Kimster, it has been a wild week, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think we finally got our members on Web Sleuth calmed down on the Trayvon Martin case. I've never seen anything like it. It's just been, and I understand it. I do. I mean, it's an emotional case. The facts are the facts, whatever they are, but you can't help but have emotion in it. And I just wish those that keep stirring the pot in the media would stop and just, I understand why they're doing it, because they want to make sure that justice is served, because for so many years it wasn't served with African Americans. I think we can all agree on that. There were so many times, you know, years ago when they didn't get a fair trial. I mean, how many times have you heard about somebody being released from jail because of DNA, and you look and they're African American, totally innocent? I can understand that. I can understand them wanting justice, but it doesn't help to lie and to make things up and to make things worse on both sides. So I just I hope people listen and just take a step back, because, like I said earlier, Kimster, it's going to be a long, hot summer, don't you think?
Yes, I do. And I do want to thank you for something, Tricia.
What did I do? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no, I want to thank you for not assigning me as a moderator on that thread.
Okay, you're very welcome. It is a little tough. And a shout-out to all the wonderful moderators on that forum. Boy, do they do a good job. And they are eating the Tums as we speak for their acid indigestion. Hey, next Sunday, there isn't going to be a show because I'm going to be out of town, but I will have a show on Tuesday, April 10th, same time, and it will be from a secret location. I'm actually going to California. I'll get to meet up with Mark and his wife for a little bit and do a little work, have a little fun, and just enjoy the sun a little bit. So if you're in Northern California, email me at tgrif@xmission.com, and maybe we can hook up for a cup of coffee or something, or maybe a wild shopping spree, who knows. But I'll be in California, when am I going? A week from yesterday. So, well, we'll have a show from a secret location on April 10th on Tuesday, and Kim, sir, you'll be able to join us, right?
Yes, I will. And I have a question, since it's a secret location, is that like hunting Easter eggs? Because Easter's next Sunday.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, in fact, we will be hunting a lot of Easter eggs. In fact, that's where I'm going. It's a secret Easter egg hunt that only middle-aged white women with rear ends the size of Texas can go hunt eggs. So that's me. Now, it's
there's a rumor going on in the chat room that you sound like Stevie Nicks, and now they're starting to wonder if you and Stevie Nicks have ever been seen in the same room together. So I don't know.
You know what? We have. Let me tell you. I actually picked Stevie Nicks up at the airport once. Years ago, we brought her in for a concert, her and Mick Fleetwood, weirdest guy on the planet. We picked him up. We had a big concert. It was called Bear Fest. It was for K-Bear. I'm going to say 1987, something like that. We picked them up at the airport and took them in to rehearse. It was like 3 in the morning, and I got to sit almost at her feet. It was so close while she sang Edge of 17. It was so cool. So, yes, I have a picture of myself with Stevie Nicks. I wish I was Stevie Nicks, believe me. I wouldn't be sitting in this snow cone shack with a leaky roof if I was. So thank you. I take that as a compliment that I sound like Stevie Nicks. That's very sweet. Okay, Kimster, I think we're going to wrap it up for the night. Thank you for all you do. I really appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who joined us tonight. We do appreciate it. RichardHornsby.com, Kirstie Hallowell, and to all of you listening and in the chat room, thank you. Don't forget our next show will be April 10th. Same time, same place. It's Web Sleuths Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events. And we always do it with common sense and sometimes a lot of emotion, but we can't help it. Take care. Good night.